It's time to get up and get your day started.
Morant. Oh! A jawbreaker!
It's Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. The first hour of Sports 56 Mornings is brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Now, here are your hosts, Greg and Eli.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome in. Already Wednesday, hump day. The Wednesday, April 24th, 2024 edition of Sports 56 Mornings. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Zach Boyd with you from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, big shout out to the terrific sponsor of this station and this studio and everything they have done for us over the years. We can't thank them enough. And you should do yourself a little treat and head on over there when you have some time to see what they have to offer, because right now their spring sale continues. They have factory direct pricing on swimming pools, spas, and patio furniture, and so much more. Check them out at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40, Family Leisure. And the first hour of the program is brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Currently 62, on the way up to 78 degrees today. We'll have a mixture of clouds and sunshine, but should be a pretty nice day. This evening, partly cloudy skies with a low of 56. A stray shower or thunderstorm is possible. And then for Thursday, looks like some rain in the forecast, about a 60% chance with a high of 73 degrees tomorrow. Coming up on the program today, we'll talk plenty of NBA playoffs. Three more games last night, and a couple of road wins, which hadn't happened up until this point in the playoffs. We will discuss that. Also, the NBA has started to give out their postseason awards, but the awards are given out for the regular season. They are starting to be handed out. We will talk about that. Also, some news from the University of Memphis as they look to replace Laird Veach as their athletics director after Laird took a job at the University of Missouri. Tim Buckley joins us at 8:05 to talk more about the situation with the athletic director's position at the University of Memphis. Tim is the deputy sports editor and senior writer for the Daily Memphian. Again, he'll join us at 8:05. At 8:30, we'll talk Major League Baseball, St. Louis Cardinals specifically, with our friend Mike Claiborne from the Cardinals Radio Network. What is going on with the Cardinals? And at 9:05, as we do each and every week, we'll talk Grizzlies, talk NBA playoffs with DeMichael Cole from the Commercial Appeal. We'll take your calls, your texts on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. And, of course, more portal news. There seems to be news every day of significance. We will discuss some of that today on the program. That's your lineup for today. Good morning, everyone. Hope you had a good Tuesday. Let's have an even better Wednesday. How are you?
I am splendiferous.
Yeah, that's not a word.
It is. I believe it is.
Is it a word?
Yes. It describes me today.
I did not sleep well last night. And I sleep well, I would say, 90% of the time. Couldn't sleep. Could not sleep. So I am working on 3.5 hours of sleep right now. And my eyes are, I'm having trouble with my eyes. You ever get like kaleidoscope? I'm seeing all kinds of weird things, man. Not that I've like drugged out or anything like that. It's just like it's not crisp right now in my eyesight.
I see dead people.
Zach, how are you, man? Are you as tired as I am?
No, I'm cooling for now.
You feeling good?
Yeah.
It's a good night last night. Three NBA playoff games. It's always a good night when we have NBA postseason. Of course, if you're into Stanley Cup playoffs, hockey, there was action there as well. Some Major League Baseball action as well. There was also a college baseball game of significance last night as Memphis fell to Mississippi State 6-4. Had the pleasure of calling that game with Jeff Brightwell, and it was the third largest attended game in the history of FedEx Park Avron Fogelman Field. Now, it's not a huge stadium, and I think in years to come that they will be adding more stands and more capacity to that stadium. But there were a lot of Bully fans there. It was a well-played game. Anytime I can call, and I'm sure you feel the same way, Eli, a well-played game by both teams, you feel good about the broadcast. The broadcast ended up going over 3 hours, but it didn't really
realize that until the I'm like looked at my watch and go, wow, this is 3:10 or whatever it was. But when it's played well, you don't notice it as much as when it's a baseball game and they're walking a million people and they're throwing around the ball and there's errors galore. Last night, both teams played well. Mississippi State just got the better of Memphis, winning 6-4 to put up a season series sweep over the Tigers.
Anytime you get a midweek game that's well played, it's always a nice thing.
Yes.
Because you can get some doozies in the midweek.
And you've called some, and I've called some, and the wind was blowing out at about 16, 17 miles per hour. I thought we would see fireworks galore. We had a couple of shots that went off the wall. We did have the one home run in the game, but it was not what I thought. The first time they met down in Starkville, Tigers had an 8-3 lead in that game and proceeded to lose 17-9. That was a lot different than what we saw last night.
Yeah, the wind. I know the wind was a little rough yesterday.
It was howling.
I played a lot of golf yesterday in that wind, and it was not fun.
Golfer's worst enemy.
It is. It was
that and crocodiles or alligators. If you're playing in Australia, crocodiles, but here in the States, alligators.
Well, my worst enemy could often be just me on the golf course.
I know,
but the wind was a real problem yesterday.
I don't know. You're a good golfer. You can handle that. I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to golf. In fact, it is so bad right now that I have to go out and learn from the pros, which I will go and take a few lessons because it is not going well right now. And I'm excited about golf this summer. I'm excited to play well, so I'm going to go ahead and try to do something about that. All right, last night, NBA playoff action. The Timberwolves grab a 2-0 series lead over the Phoenix Suns. They win 105-93. This wasn't Anthony Edwards going off. This was Jaden McDaniels. 25 points, 8 rebounds. We know what he does defensively. And when you think about that Minnesota team, you rattle off the names. Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, Carl Anthony Towns, Mike Conley, maybe Naz Reid before you even get to McDaniels. And he is a terrific player. All 5 starters in double-figure scoring. And they did what they were supposed to do. They won 2 at home.
Yeah, Phoenix, really at halftime, if you were Phoenix, you had to be feeling pretty bad. When you can get a first half against Minnesota in which Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns combined for 7 points.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have more than a 1-point lead.
I would say so.
That's not a good thing because you're like, okay, we've done this. Towns in foul trouble, didn't play much, only took 2 shots in the first half. Edwards is 1-for-5, and we lead by 1. That's probably not good. And then Edwards got it going a little bit in the second half, hit some big shots. But yeah, I mean, McDaniels obviously, in the first half it was McDaniels, Gobert, Conley carried him. And then those other guys kind of chipped in the second half. And McDaniels was absolutely terrific. And, the Suns stars did not shoot the ball real well themselves. And, certainly they could still come back and win the series. All they did was lose 2 games on the road. But it does not look good right now. Grayson Allen goes out with the injury. We'll see what his status is for the next game. But he's now injured that ankle twice. And looked pretty bad last night when we really couldn't put any weight on it at all. They do get 2 off days before their next game on Friday, so maybe that helps. But the Suns appear to be in a bit of trouble.
The Suns have scored less than 100 points in both games. And when Minnesota is able to play that type of defense with the firepower that they have on offense, you're in trouble. And the Suns with that star-studded trio of Durant, Beal, and Booker. As you said, they're only down 2-0, losing 2 on the road. But it doesn't look promising. And there will be the debate if they go down in the series about that star-studded trio. They brought another stud in with Beal, who was hurt early in the season, and I know it took a while for them to find their chemistry. But they were playing pretty well going into the postseason. This would be hugely disappointing. I'm not saying that it's shocking if Minnesota wins, not by any stretch of the imagination. Minnesota, I think, was the better team in the regular season. But where do you go from here if you're Matt Ishbia, you're willing to spend a lot of money, You have three superstars on your team. I don't know what else you can do. You went out, you made that trade. What was it, before the season when they made the trade with Portland to pick up Nurkic?
Mm-hmm.
You got rid of Ayton. People were putting the blame on Ayton. I don't know. I don't know where Phoenix goes from there.
Minnesota is, I mean, they're the number one defensive team in the league, which is why I believe Rudy Gobert probably will win Defensive Player of the Year. You know, they're an elite defensive team. And, you know, again, some of it just comes down to making shots. I mean, when you're Kevin Durant or, you know, even Devin Booker somewhat, but I mean, a guy like Durant, even with good defense, he has the ability to make shots because he could shoot over the top of anybody in the league. And they just right now aren't making a ton of shots. And what they end up last night from 8 of 22 from 3-point range, shoot 44% overall. Two teams are they were identical from the field overall last night. Big difference at the free throw line where the Timberwolves were 26 out of 30. That was the big difference in the game. But for the Suns, I mean, those Booker 1 for 6 from three, Durant 0 for 2 from three. They combined to go, you know, Beal goes 6 of 17 from the field. They were, what, 18 of 45 combined from the three of them. And you get a little bit of a turn back the clock night from Eric Gordon, who hit some shots, but those three guys have to really be, to beat a team like Minnesota, those three guys are going to have to be great.
I saw a story yesterday on the, and they do this annually, they take a poll of NBA players anonymously, and they ask him a bunch of questions. And the answer to this question was Rudy Gobert, the most overrated player in the NBA. And while the trade at first between Utah and Minnesota was laughable, Rudy Gobert, if Minnesota can get to the finals, has been a difference maker. Yeah, maybe he wasn't worth everything they gave up. Maybe he's not totally worth the money he's paid because he's not some big-time offensive player. But the most overrated player in the league? And this is the his fellow player saying that.
I got that says it all. I mean, it's the players that say it. I believe it, but my opinion doesn't matter. Like, the other players believe it.
But if he's the defensive player of the year, and again, we don't know yet. I'm not sure what night they give that out. But I don't know how you can be the most overrated player in the league if you end up becoming the defensive player of the year. Anyway, Minnesota 2-0. They move now to Phoenix for game three. We have some road winners. The Pacers going to Milwaukee. And again, no Giannis. 125-108. Indiana wins going away. They even the series up at 1. So they steal home court advantage from Milwaukee. And now they head to Indianapolis to be exact. Pascal Siakam, who I love, 37 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists. Miles Turner, 22 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. They have not had a big game in a while from Tyrese Halliburton, and they really didn't need it. Damian Lillard, again, like game one, had a huge first half, not so much second half. At least he scored in the second half this time around. He ends up with 34. But the Bucks could be in trouble. Let me go back to the whole move for Doc Rivers, not putting all the blame on Doc, but it just hasn't clicked. Indiana's got him where they want him right now by splitting the two on the road to open the series.
This looked like the Indiana offense that was one of the best offenses for the entire regular season. You know, game one, they shot under 40% for the first time all year, and then they come back and shoot over 55% in game two. Both teams shot great from three-point range in this game, but I mean, Indiana just overall, everybody's making shots. I mean, Siakam, and no surprise, he's the guy on that team that has the playoff experience, having been through it and winning a championship with Toronto, but he's had 36 and 37 in the two games. Miles Turner was fantastic. Nembhard's Nembhard was fantastic. I mean, but it was just an ultra efficient offense, which is what Indiana does. That is their thing. They are an ultra efficient offense, which in game one, they were not at all. And a lot of that starts with Halliburton. He gets the assist numbers in this because guys actually made shots off of his passes. In game one, they didn't. They shot like 30-something percent, under right around 30%, I think, off of passes from him. So, yeah, without Giannis, you know, I just don't believe that there's enough firepower to keep up with Indiana when Indiana is making shots. And more times than not, they do make shots.
And remember, Indiana is without Benedict Mathurin, who had right shoulder surgery and was dominant against Milwaukee in their meetings this year. So that is a big weapon that they don't have. But I think Nembhard has really stepped up. He had 20 points in this game. Neesmith has done a nice job. They've gotten some support from the bench. Toppin's done okay. McConnell is a proven veteran. Yeah, I mean, Indiana right now, I don't want to say driver's seat, series is even at one, but as long as they take care of business at home, they're going to win this series. And then the late game, and this is one I just, I'm so mad that I didn't just play the Mavs straight up money line to win. I thought the Mavs would even this series. I did not believe, I don't think the Mavs are a great team by any stretch of the imagination. I think they're an improved team because of the bigs they were able to pick up in deals before the trade deadline and Gafford and P.J. Washington. I thought they're more well-rounded. I still think the Clippers will probably win the series, although I wouldn't be surprised either way. But I thought the Mavs would bounce back after playing like crap in game one, especially defensively. And they end up getting the win 96-93, late game last night, in case you missed it. Luka, 32 and 9 assists. Kyrie, 23 points and 6 rebounds. Kawhi did return for the Clippers. 15.7 rebounds. He was 0 of 5 from 3. Paul George and James Harden, 22 points each. Zubac had another double-double. But this game, I don't know why it was that much different, because you look at the stats for the Clippers and they look pretty much like they did in game one. But defensively, the Mavs strengthened up. They got whatever it was that they did not have in the first game, they were much better in the second game.
Well, it's, I mean, you can look at the Clippers and, I mean, 36% field goal. 36%, going to be tough to win.
I didn't watch that game at all. Was that more, again, what Dallas did to tighten the defense? Or is it just the Clippers missing open shots? Did you watch it at all?
I watched very little of it.
Did you watch it, Zach? The Clippers game?
No, I didn't.
But, I mean, again, I think Dallas certainly is better defensively, but a lot of it in the NBA just comes down to simply, you know, making shots. I mean these guys all certainly have that ability. You know, Kawhi, certainly, you know, there's going to be some rust there with him coming back.
Right.
And he goes 0 for 5 from three-point range. So that's not a shock to think that he might be a little bit rusty. But, you know, they go game one, they went 18 of 36 from three-point range. Game two, they go 8 of 30. So you go from 50% down to 26% just from three-point range alone. 46% from the field in game one, 36% in game two. And, you know, Harden, who was really good in game one, looked like the James Harden we often see in the playoffs. He goes 2 for 10. You know, the bench, Westbrook 2 for 9 from the field, Norman Powell 2 for 10 from the field. So you got those two guys. You know, Plumlee goes 0 for 3. I mean, the bench did, you know, was horrendous from the field. So it's with Luka doing his thing and when Kyrie does his thing, you know, then P.J. Washington.
Yes, I was just going to bring up P.J. Washington.
You know, him going 3 for 4 from three-point range and scoring 18 points is not something the Mavericks are necessarily counting on.
That's why I said those pickups of Washington and Gafford were huge. Now, Gafford, I don't know if he ended up getting hurt in that game. He only played 9 minutes. I know he was ineffective in game one. And then Tim Hardaway Jr. did get hurt. He only played 6 minutes. So you overcome. Hardaway is so important to this team off the bench. He plays 6 minutes, as I said. Gafford, 9 minutes, and you still win. I think P.J. Washington stepping up. That's why I like Dallas a lot more than I did last year, because of the acquisitions of the bigs. Now, do I think they're the best team in the West? Not even close, and they probably won't win this series when it's all said and done. But like I said, I would not be surprised. I just don't think they have lasting ability in the playoffs. I don't think they're as good as some of these teams ahead of them, and we already talked about Minnesota and Denver, obviously, at the top. And the Clippers, of course, finished, what, third in the West? So, again, it would be an upset if Dallas did win this series, but it's still a possibility. All right, tonight in the NBA playoffs, there are just two games on tap. We have the Celtics back in action against Miami after throttling them in Game 1, 1-0 Boston series lead. And New Orleans and Oklahoma City, Game 2 in OKC. That was a great first game between those two as New Orleans fell 94-92. So we'll see how that one turns out. I think there's a good chance New Orleans could even the series up against Oklahoma City. I have a feeling that one could go seven.
I mean, we'll see. I don't know. I don't have much faith in that. But Oklahoma City, certainly, again, they're so young. And to be put in this situation, I mean, it puts pressure on you as the number one seed with a team that has pretty much no playoff experience whatsoever. So we'll see how, now having a game under their belts, how do they respond tonight? We shall see.
We were talking yesterday a lot about the complaints by the Lakers in their game, by the Sixers in their game against the Knicks. Well, the last 2-minute report came out for the Knicks-Sixers game. It came out for all the games, but for the Knicks-Sixers game in particular, and that was that Knicks miraculous 104-101 win where they just stole it from Philadelphia in the final 30-40 seconds. Well, the last 2-minute report revealed that Tyrese Maxey was fouled multiple times during a frenetic defining sequence and that 76ers coach Nick Nurse called for a timeout, but the referees didn't see it. Specifically, the league said Jalen Brunson grabbed Maxey's jersey before the ball was inbounded after Brunson's three-pointer cut Philly's lead to 2, and that Josh Hart then bumped Maxey as he caught the inbounds pass, sending him falling to the ground. Maxey then committed a turnover trying to pass the ball after he fell to the ground. So does that change your opinion about their complaints?
No, because that wasn't what they were complaining about. He's complaining about the timeout situation. And, yeah, he called the timeout. Again, you can't count on a referee to see every timeout you try and call. And when he really tried to call the timeout the second time, Maxey was already on the ground, and the referee, I mean, it's hard to say whether he has possession or not.
We have had now.
And I still maintain that the smart play there was to just call the timeout before inbounding the basketball and advancing it to half court. That solves all those problems.
No, I agreed with that when you said that yesterday. But we have had now. In the NBA, we've had situations in college over the years, whether a coach called timeout or not, infamous John Calipari, national championship game versus Kansas, timeout, no timeout. Is there a better way, if the officials are not recognizing coaches all the time with the timeouts, is there a way to do it where, let's say they buzzed to the official scorekeeper? And the scorekeeper immediately stops the game. I mean, is there a way to take it out of the hands of the officials at that moment if they're missing coaches' signals for a timeout?
No, I mean, the referees, their whistle stops the game. So, no. I mean, again, the easy way here was to have Kyle Lowry call the timeout.
I understand. But, again, this is not the first incident. It's happened. I don't know. I don't have a number, but it's happened before. Just trying to think if there's a better way.
It happens about 0.00001% of the time.
Yeah, but when it happens, it's critical. And that was critical. But again, still, the last 2-minute report indicated fouls that were not called, which continues to, I think there's a lot of belly aching. Like I said, I compared it now to soccer. You know, they cry as much as soccer players, basketball players do. Every single play when they probably fouled 9 out of 10 times and yet they feel they fouled 0 out of 10 times. But when these reports come out, they always seem to indicate that officials have blown calls or have missed calls.
Well, yeah, because you're going to. It's impossible not to.
Well, again, I can't. It's hard to accept it's going to happen, especially when it happens in critical times that could cost you a game and could cost you a series.
I mean, again, it's impossible to not miss calls at an NBA basketball game. Or any basketball game, let alone the NBA. I mean, with the freak athletes you're dealing with. It's impossible to get every call right.
Yeah, I don't know what you can do with basketball. I know that in baseball, and I don't want to go down another avenue here, but as much as I've heard about Angel Hernandez again in the last week and other umpires, Wendell Statt, others missing balls and strikes, the robo home plate umpire makes more sense to me every single day. Because if you have the technology to get it right, I know there are some people that say, don't take out the human factor. Why not? Take out the human factor. If you can get all the balls and strikes called right, correctly, do it. But again, with basketball, I don't know. I know this. Every single time you go to lunch or dinner at Corky's Ribs and Barbecue, you're going to get delicious BBQ. It's not going to be, this wasn't that good. It's always going to be great because they've perfected it over four decades, that delicious slow smoked barbecue. Consistency is what you're going to get at Corky's. They have lunch specials every single day, party packs that start at just $7.49. If you're really hungry, go in there, get an entree, add a third of a rack of ribs for just $6.99. They will cater events large and small. Just ask them about their catering services. You got graduation parties coming up this spring, anniversaries, family reunions, business, corporate outings, whatever the case may be, sporting events, you want to do a little tailgating, think of Corky's. Four locations, Poplar Avenue in Memphis, Poplar Avenue in Collierville, Germantown Parkway in Cordova, and Goodman Road in Olive Branch. Corky's Ribs and Barbecue, open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week. When we come back, could Memphis land a prized five-star prospect? This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Be sure to follow us at Sports 56 WHBQ on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to watch live video of our shows, stay up to date with station events, and have chances to win prizes. Don't miss out on anything that's going on. Follow us at Sports 56 WHBQ. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Here once again are Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. So baby, try.
Expected, Dr. Bill Hargrave announced yesterday via social media that Jeff Crane, our good buddy who comes on every Tuesday here on the show, the deputy AD at the University of Memphis, will become the interim athletics director as the national search will begin for a successor to Laird Veach, who was formally announced as the new AD at Missouri yesterday as well. Jeff will do a great job in whatever capacity, and certainly will be in the running for the full-time job, but there will be a number of terrific candidates. We talked about some of those potential candidates yesterday on the show, but again, I think they're in good hands with Jeff.
Certainly, yes. Jeff has done a great job in his role since being at the University of Memphis, and certainly will do a good job here, and we'll see how long it takes for them to officially decide on a successor to Laird Veach and permanently in that position. But in the interim, yes, Jeff, they are in good hands with Jeff.
NFL draft begins tomorrow. I'm excited about it. I'm sure a lot of you folks are that love the draft. I don't get bored with it even. And I don't get a lot of opportunities to watch on Saturday. Usually something's going on. I might be doing a baseball game. But I always like to pop it on when I can, and then try to go back as they scroll all the names that have been picked that I have missed. That's just something I dig. I dig the draft. I always have, both the NFL draft and the NBA draft. But tomorrow night, dreams will begin to come to fruition for these young men. Interesting note here from Adam Schefter about a particular quarterback. It has nothing to do with the draft, but league sources telling Schefter that the Steelers, they do not expect to pick up the $25 million fifth-year option on quarterback Justin Fields, who they acquired from the Chicago Bears for a conditional 2025 sixth-round pick. Fields and Russell Wilson both now will be entering the last year of their contracts. Interesting, because Wilson is at the very end of his career, and Fields, you know, hopefully for him, has a long, long career still to come. But if Fields doesn't have that opportunity this year to play, meaning Russell Wilson has won the job and he's doing a good job for Pittsburgh, then they won't have a good idea about Fields to make a decision on whether to keep him for the future, sign him to a new deal. But if Fields wins the job, which again, most people don't expect him to start the season, but an injury, an effectiveness, things of that nature, Fields could be thrust right into the moment to try to help the Steelers get to the postseason, and that could change his fortunes all around. So nothing's set in stone. When they picked up Fields for what they picked him up for, I was shocked, and I think a lot of people were as well. But then second, it was, okay, he's the future, right? He's got to be the future. Wilson will finish off his career in the next couple of years, and then Fields will take over. Not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the fifth-year option, I don't think they want to give him that, you know, pick up that fifth-year option when, and I don't know exactly what his is, how much the fifth-year option is for him, but it's going to be more money than you would want to pay a backup quarterback. And so you're kind of going to, you're picking that up now. If things work out or whatever, and he ends up being your starter, you believe he's going to be the starter the next year, then you can, or if he's going to be the backup, you can try and negotiate a free agent contract with him. But I don't think you just want to pick up his fifth year option and guarantee that money when you don't know what he's going to be.
Well, that's the dilemma. But if you think he's going to be the future quarterback for your team, then you pick it up, because if not, then he becomes what, a free agent? And you may lose him there, but you're right. If you don't get to see him, you don't know what he brings to the table in a Steelers uniform. So that's quite the dilemma, certainly, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Chicago Bears, of course, have the number one pick.
Yeah, his fifth-year option is $25 million.
Yeah, I figured it had to be pretty steep. Bears have the number one pick. They'll take Caleb Williams. This is the third time that the Bears have had the number one pick in the draft. In 1936, you remember this one?
I do.
Tom Harmon. Now, I remember Tom Harmon. Tom Harmon's son, Mark Harmon, former football player but actor. I think he's on one of those CSIs, those 100 different CSIs they have, I think. But Tom Harmon, his father, was picked number one in the 41 draft, 1941. So, so it's 41, not 36. 36 was the first NFL draft. So the fifth overall NFL draft, the Bears had the number one pick in 1941, took Tom Harmon. And then 6 years later, in 1947, they had the number one overall, and they drafted Oklahoma State halfback Bob Fenimore. Those were the days, and those days continued for a long time, when running backs were more important seemingly than quarterbacks, and they always went number one. Now, you may not have a running back in the first round. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, those were the days when they didn't know about the forward pass. So running backs became a lot more important when you weren't throwing passes.
Yeah, but running backs were important in the 70s. Running backs were important in the 80s. Running backs were important in the 90s. They were taken seemingly endlessly in the first round. And I don't have the number one picks in front of me, but I know quarterbacks probably lead the way, but certainly running backs were treasured much more than they are now. You would admit to that, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah, I'm not talking about, you know, the forward pass is a good is a great joke there, and you're right about that. But I'm talking about here in modern football, when running backs used to be a priority for teams. No longer are they. No longer. And again, more than likely, no running back will be selected in the first round. Speaking of running backs, yesterday Joe DeLeon joined us to talk about the draft. And I also asked him about, because he covers college football and with the NFL extensively, I asked him about Dallin Hayden going to Colorado to play for Deion Sanders. And he brought up Dylan Edwards, the running back. And he said, well, you know, Edwards basically saying it's a nice tandem. Dylan Edwards is hitting the transfer portal. Colorado's losing yet another player. Now, is Edwards hitting the portal because Dallin Hayden's coming? Which would be like the reverse role from what happened in Columbus, Ohio for Dallin. And they brought in Quinshon Judkins. They just added to their running back room and seemed like Dallin would be the odd man out. He went into the portal like most athletes would do now in that situation. Nails down a new home in Boulder, Colorado, beautiful Boulder. And now all of a sudden, boom, Dylan Edwards, unless it was already in the mix. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because of that or not, but now that, I mean, that is every one of their top rushers from last year basically is gone. So, and again, I don't know if they brought in anybody else in the running back position along with Dallin, but basically the running backs from last year that got the carries, they are all gone now. So that it looks like it's a great opportunity for Dallin to go in there and be the guy in the backfield. Because they're, again, unless they brought in some other ones that, but you know, Hankerson's gone, Edwards is gone, McCaskill's gone. that's their guys from last year.
Has it gone from Shangri-La in his first year, all eyes were on Boulder, stars, I mean, from stage and screen and the music world, wanted to go see games when Colorado was playing because of Coach Prime. And now, is it, can I even use this word, toxic? That all these players want to leave? And it's not just players wanting, it's not just Deion weeding out players like he did last year when he took the reins. These are players on their own going in a different direction, not liking what they're seeing there.
Well, it's going to be about, does he win? Like in the end, if he wins this year, but you know, last year it was understandable to come in and you know, it was the complete changeover of the roster. Some people, you could explain about it, like they were terrible. So they needed basically a whole new roster. But now with another year, theoretically, you should be getting better. You know, they had the great start, but then the terrible finish. And now it's, yeah, if guys are leaving for whatever reason and you end up, if it's a 2-10 season, it ain't going to be good. I mean, that's, you know, they obviously still have his son, who's awesome, and you know, Travis Hunter, who's awesome. But if you have a 2-10, 3-9 type year, and then those guys leave for the draft, in the end, he's still going to have to win. He brought a lot of attention, and they're going to pay a lot of attention when you're losing, and there's a lot of people hoping that you lose.
When we come back, is Memphis about to land a big fish on the basketball court? Plus, Caitlin Clark's deal with Nike revealed. It's coming up when we return.
This hour of our program is brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Folks, again, great grilling weather that we've got right now. Great time to fire up a Big Green Egg and cook whatever it is that your heart desires, because it's going to taste great. When you get the Big Green Egg, it is the best grill there is. You go to biggreenegg.com, get all the details. Check out all the different sizes. They got 7 different sizes of the Big Green Egg for you to choose from. All the accessories as well that help you make that food taste even better with the Big Green Egg. It's the last grill you'll ever need to buy. It comes with that lifetime warranty, the Big Green Egg.
You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
We are Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 WHBQ. Available on your radio dial at 560 AM and 98.5 FM, as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, stay tuned in to Real Sports Talk. Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by the Big Green Egg. Here once again are Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
So yesterday we were talking about Jaden Quaintance, the five-star big man who committed to Kentucky and then decommitted and jumped in the portal once Cal left to go to Arkansas. And while others have done the same and have followed Cal to Arkansas, the latest could be Billy Richmond, who is planning to visit Cal in Fayetteville. Jaden Quaintance, it came out yesterday that he does not have Arkansas in his mix anymore. No longer Arkansas. So while Kentucky's still trying to hold on for dear life and get him back with Mark Pope, Louisville, he's already paid a visit to Louisville. Memphis is on that list. And as it was reported yesterday, I believe he's taking a visit to Memphis this weekend. There is a chance that Memphis could land this guy. Memphis has had a mixed bag with bigs. Certainly some big hits and some big misses. But they've produced some guys in the NBA that have taken the ball and run with it. From Jalen Duren to Precious Achiuwa. Then, of course, the debacle with Wiseman, who's in the NBA. And, of course, last year, Jordan Brown, which fizzled out very early. This kid's 16 years old and is a stud. Played in the recent Jordan Brand Classic, I think it was. And, again, we'll see. But there's a chance. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I don't have no crystal ball here or inside information. But Arkansas no longer in the mix? Stunning to me. I thought it was a given.
I mean, listen, some people will follow the coach no matter what. Others may, you know, may. It may have been that Kentucky is, I mean, Kentucky's still Kentucky. And so that coach at Kentucky is more attractive than that coach at Arkansas.
Yeah, but you have Arkansas and you have those Fortune 500 companies stepping up. And I'm not sure what Queens can get at Kentucky. I'm sure it's a lot. I have a feeling that in Fayetteville, you can get a lot more. But here in Memphis now, with FedEx stepping up, there's those strong NIL possibility. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know the guy, and I'm not going to sit here and speculate about a bidding war for him, but a kid who's that talented, has that much potential, those schools, and maybe there's some others in the mix that has not been reported, they're going to want his services and do whatever they can. Speaking of Kentucky and Mark Pope's roster, not roster, but his coaching staff, he has added Alvin Brooks III. He has named him associate head coach. Alvin Brooks was on Scott Drew's staff, who, in an ironic twist, turned down, apparently, the job at Kentucky to stay at Baylor. But Alvin Brooks III is headed to Lexington. Jason Hart, the former G League Ignite head coach, former USC assistant, he's on the staff. Cody Fuger, who came over with Pope from BYU, he's on the staff. And Mark Fox, remember good old Mark Fox?
Mm-hmm.
Former Georgia head coach, among other schools. He's a special assistant on that Kentucky staff.
Matt texts in on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 901-360-8255. Says, I saw reports he's looking for like $2 million. Do you think we should pay that?
I don't think Memphis has $2 million to pay him. They're not taking two-fifths of that money allotted to them from FedEx. And, of course, there's other money, certainly,
They have two different collectives.
The basketball team already had, yeah, but the basketball has.
I don't know if they that kind of money to give, yeah.
I don't know if they can afford $2 million. I don't know how good the kid actually is. I have no idea.
Would I do it? No. I would have to set a cap. I would not do it, but that's me. $2 million? No. I think the cap, I would cap it at $1 million.
If you were going to pay that type of money, I would first try and pay it to David Jones to get him to come back.
And again, we talked about that. It was a great story from Jason Munns about how they can work around or try to work around getting him that kind of money for being a foreign-born player, as he is, having been born in the Dominican Republic. Caitlin Clark, according to reports, her deal with Nike will pay her a reported $28 million. Do you remember the length? Is it 7 years?
I don't know.
Zach, can you look up the details? I want to say seven. That pops out. I don't know why I didn't write it down. But $28 million. Of course, she's getting a signature shoe as well. Wow. That's just Nike. She already does State Farm commercials. She'll do a hell of a lot more endorsements. That's going to be one rich young lady.
Well, she has State Farm. She has Gatorade. She has Xfinity. She has Gainbridge.
She has commercials for all them?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen her other than State Farm.
She does the Gatorade one where she talks about other girls that could do this and all that stuff.
Okay.
And then she has the Xfinity one where she, I can't remember what that one is. Gainbridge, I haven't seen. I just know she signed that deal because of their association with Indiana. And the Fever, but yeah, I mean, she's a pretty big deal. People tend to like her and like watching her play. She's the first two-time winner of the Sullivan Award that she won. I mean, she is kind of a big deal.
Are we talking here, when it's all said and done, 40, 50 million a year?
I have no idea what her deal with State Farm and all those, you know, Gatorade, all those would be. I have no idea how much type of money that is.
Well, we know the viewership for the WNBA will go up. And I think last year it actually went up a little bit too. It's still something that doesn't tickle my fancy, although if I see that it's on, I'll pop it on. But do you think there's going to be a significant increase in viewership across the board of the WNBA or just games that she's involved in?
Just games she's involved in. It's great for women's sports, what she has done. But in the end, I believe it's just her. Like, I think college women's basketball next year, there it may be up from where it used to be, but it's going to come back down. Like, I think it is just a fascination with Caitlin Clark. People like watching Caitlin Clark. Not that they now have found women's basketball and love women's basketball. They love watching Caitlin Clark play basketball.
There is stories out there about why African-American women basketball players don't have a signature shoe with Nike. That's correct, Zach, right? No black female signature shoe with Nike. I think there may be with other companies.
I believe so.
But I think currently, and I forget what shoe company Cheryl Swoops had the deal with. It may have been Nike, but she's been long retired. But Asia Wilson is the one they bring up, who is a fantastic player. So, you know, I think it's an interesting point. I don't know what her popularity is, and I don't know what the reasoning would be from Nike, but you would think that that makes sense, that Asia Wilson or somebody else of color would have a shoe. But it also makes sense why Caitlin Clark has a shoe. And for people to make that argument, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both. Certainly bringing up that point is an interesting point that I'm sure Nike is looking at. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they go ahead and one of these players, if not more, end up having a great deal with Nike and a signature shoe. But it's understandable why they're seizing the moment. Striking while the iron's hot, let's say, with Caitlin Clark. They're a business, for goodness sakes.
Here's why she does and they don't. Because they're not her. They don't draw millions of eyeballs. Like, it's simple. And don't do it whether she's white, black, or anything. She draws millions of eyeballs every single game she plays.
Right.
That's why she's got one.
Well, there's no... And again, there shouldn't be an argument why she has it and why she has this deal. And for people that make that argument or turn it into race or anything like that, it's ridiculous. They're shrewd business people. Phil Knight and company, they built that company from nothing. I'm sure you've seen the movie. And they do that because they're intelligent people. But it doesn't mean that with the growing sport that it is, and it started to grow even before Caitlin Clark, that one or a few of these women deserve to have also signature shoes if they feel it is monetarily beneficial to this organization, this company.
You can argue about what the records mean and whether she's the greatest women's basketball player of all time, whatever. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and argue about who the greatest women's basketball players of all time are. I know who the most popular women's basketball player is of all time, and it's not even close.
Yeah, no argument there. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, hour number two, we will open it up talking with Tim Buckley from the Daily Memphian. What direction does Memphis go in for their new AD and the legacy of Laird Veach? This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 98.5 FM.